They came back having deliberated for a little under 2 hours, which is remarkably quick for a murder trial that has gone on for the past few weeks. They've heard an awful lot of evidence during that time. An awful lot of witnesses have testified in this case. They received an awful lot of exhibits before they went out to begin their deliberations earlier this week. So when word filtered through the building, a little after lunchtime, at 2:05 precisely, we learned that a verdict was on the way. And I mean, I suppose given that only 2 hours of deliberations had taken place, I did second guess whether that was actually what I heard. And I had to ask the registrar for confirmation, and he assured me, yes, that there was a verdict on the way. So, as you can imagine, everybody filed back into Court 13 in the Criminal Courts of Justice. Aisling's family were back in court shortly after the news emerged from the jury room. Her parents, Ray and Kathleen, a sister, Amy, brother, Cathal, and boyfriend, Ryan, and all of the other relatives and family friends that have been there day in and day out throughout what has been an absolute horror show, a really difficult and harrowing case for them to have sat through. I found it very difficult, so I can only imagine what it was like for those closest to Aisling. I noticed when the family had taken their seats in the public gallery that Aisling's mother, Kathleen, had this beautiful photograph of her daughter, a framed photograph. She held that throughout the session yesterday, and it was a really lovely photograph, a photograph that I hadn't seen before myself. You know, there've been lots of photographs in the media since that dreadful day back in January of last year, but I hadn't seen this photo. It was a stunning photo of her, that big, beautiful smile that we're all so familiar with, beaming out of that photo frame. And Kathleen held it with great pride and with a sense of comfort, I think, holding that as the jurors filed back into the court. Pushkin, on the other hand, sat there alone in the dock, scanning the room as he waited for his interpreter to arrive. So we heard the verdict was coming back. That was at 2:05. And then it took 10 minutes before the interpreter arrived back into the courtroom. She dashed into the dock to sit alongside him, out of breath. That was a painful 10 minutes as the court waited for her to arrive. The judge came back in shortly afterwards. And then the jurors, arguably the most important people, certainly at that stage of proceedings, filed back into the courtroom at 2:17. Moments later, then Josef Puschka learned his fate. And I should say that everybody in the courtroom probably learned it a couple of moments before he did, because it had to be translated to him. And you can imagine the scenes. Well, you know, that huge outpouring of relief. You know, the family of Aisling Murphy completely overcome with emotion, embracing each other, sobbing. I even noticed a few smiles cracked in the public gallery. And God knows there weren't many opportunities to crack a smile during this trial. It has been very, very difficult, but they were absolutely deserving of that smile yesterday. A smile for Aisling. It was lovely to see, because despite the fact that this was a very compelling case, one of the most clear-cut cases that I have ever covered in all of my time down at the Central Criminal Court covering these dreadful cases, I have never been so confident of a verdict in all my life. But there is still that little niggling thought in the back of your head, that little element of doubt, the question, what if? And thankfully, that was put to bed by the jury yesterday after, as I say, just 2 hours of deliberations.
When it was translated to Mr. Poshka, did he react in any way?
When it dawned on him that he had been convicted, and remarkably, I really don't think that he was expecting that result. There was an air of confidence about Josef Puschka throughout the trial. So I think he was taken aback somewhat when he was eventually convicted yesterday afternoon. And when it dawned on him, I was seated quite close to the dock, so I had a good look at him. And he just bowed his head and rarely raised his gaze from there on in. He did seem shocked, I must say, and showed very little emotion thereafter. That's not that unusual in these situations. In my experience, it's only after the fact, once the shock has left the dock, that you know the reality dawns on somebody like Mr. Pushka. But he has been found guilty, and you could say, and you know what, I will say that this should have been put to bed an awful long time ago, because having sat through the pre-trial hearing, and this was before a jury was sworn in, this was an opportunity for any legal issues to be ironed out before the trial got underway. And that was the first time that I heard the mountain of evidence against Josef Puschka. It was quite remarkable. And he was unsuccessful in getting any of that substantial evidence thrown out. So once the court and the judge had ruled on those legal arguments, and you still had this mountain of evidence against him in the case, the DNA, his DNA that was found under Aisling's fingernails, the confession. He admitted to the murder 2 days after he killed her along the Grand Canal in Tullamore. And despite the fact that the judge was allowing all of that evidence to go in, he still contested the charge, as was his right. But I was somewhat taken aback when he pleaded not guilty on the opening day, because what flowed from that was the following 3 or 4 weeks, and Aisling's poor family having to sit through all of that, hearing a lot of that detail for the first time, being undoubtedly re-traumatized by it. It was of absolute no surprise to anyone that he was convicted yesterday. As to why he decided to contest the charge in the first instance, I mean, there's only one person that can answer that, and he'll soon be handed a life sentence.
Indeed. So once the verdict was announced, the judge, I suppose, was unshackled, and he could express his own opinion too, which he obviously couldn't do during the trial itself. And he didn't hold back.
Absolutely not. Mr. Justice Tony Hunt certainly didn't mince his words. As soon as the verdict came back in, he assured the jurors that it was the right one. As if there was any doubt, he told them that he had no hesitation in saying that he agreed with their verdict. He was satisfied that it was the correct verdict. And he also thanked them for not wasting any more time on Pushka's nonsense. And it was nonsense. There's no other way of describing the case that he put forward, claiming when he took the stand himself that he was actually also attacked by the man who murdered Aisling Murphy, and that he was actually trying to assist her in the ditch that day. Utter nonsense. And thankfully, the jury saw through it. And Mr. Justice Hunt told them that he didn't find the case easy. And that's saying something for an experienced judge like him, who has seen and sat through it all. He described it as a straightforward case, and he said that the prompt verdict that was delivered yesterday reflected how straightforward it was. He also said, when he spoke about Pushka's nonsense, he was quick to point out that wasn't a reflection on his defence team, which was led by his barrister, Michael Bowman, a very experienced and a brilliant criminal barrister, very well respected in the criminal courts of justice. Mr. Pushka said that everybody is entitled to put forward a defence. Michael Bowman didn't have a lot to work with, but he had to put his client's case forward. Everyone, as I say, is entitled to put forward a defence, even somebody like Josef Pushka. The judge described it as a very difficult job defending those cases. It's thankless, it's unpopular. But again, he said that even people like Pushka are entitled to a defence. And he also told the jurors that quite literally they had made sure that somebody didn't get away with murder. He thanked them for their diligence and their attention throughout, and they were a diligent and attentive jury, taking notes and following the evidence very closely from what I could see throughout the trial. And the judge then excused them from jury duty for 20 years. And before he did, before they filed out of court 13, he pointed to the dock and he told them, as you say, we have evil in this room.
Finally, for now, Frank, a murder conviction carries a mandatory sentence. So what happens next?
Well, the next and final step in this process, the judicial process, is the sentence hearing. It's one size fits all when it comes to murder. I've often said that I think, you know, we should start looking at other jurisdictions like the UK, who can hand down whole life tariffs, because life really doesn't mean life in Ireland. Somebody can, you know, apply for parole after 12 years serving a life sentence. That doesn't necessarily mean that they'll get it. But the average sentence that somebody like Josef Pushka spends behind bars is about 20 years. And I think there are cases, and I do think this is one, where you can make the argument for a whole life tariff, or certainly some sort of a tariff put in place so that he is behind bars for an awful long time. But what will happen next is the focus will actually shift from Josef Pushka. And I think that that is a welcome shift, because at next week's sentence hearing, this day week, the family of Aisling Murphy will take center stage, and Aisling will be front and center, as she should always have been. But this case was about Josef Pushka. And it's a very difficult thing for families like Aisling's to get their heads around. You know, it's about Josef Pushka and it's about the fair trial. But that now changes. And, you know, through those victim impact statements, the family would be given an opportunity to, I suppose, tell the court and tell the world, you know, who Aisling was. She was just 23 years of age. She was a primary school teacher. She loved GAA. She loved playing for a local club, Kilcormac Colahy. She was a very talented musician. She was a very caring person. You can tell that by her family. Brilliant, lovely people. Her boyfriend, Ryan. You know, her brother, Cahill, who spoke outside court yesterday. Her sister, Amy. You know, Kathleen, Ray. I could go on and on and on. She came from such a lovely family, a beautiful community. And she didn't just take. Quite the opposite. She gave so much back to the people around her, to the people of her community, to the people in her school, Durrow National School, to her students, to the people she taught music. I never met her. I wish I had. But I feel like just with even that much information, I know the type of person that she was. And hopefully, you know, through those victim impact statements, the court will get a better flavor of who she was and how, you know, devastating her death has affected the family. And I should say, you know, when it comes to these types of cases, you know, victims, people like Aisling Murphy are looked at in a very kind of one-dimensional view, because the jury is only concerned with how they died and who was responsible. And that makes sense. They don't learn about the life that they led or the life that they could have led. You know, in this case, she was just 23 years of age, had already done so much with her life and had so much more living to do before it was stolen from her, as her boyfriend Ryan said yesterday, by a complete stranger, Yosef Pushka. And on that, I do want to put it to bed once and for all that Aisling Murphy and Yosef Pushka were not known to one another. He was a complete stranger to her. There was no link whatsoever between them. You hear horrible rumours doing the rounds in the immediate aftermath of a murder and in the lead up to the trial and indeed during. But I want to put those to bed once and for all for the sake of the family, because that just adds extra stress to an already very stressful and distressing situation. They did not know each other. Yosef Pushka was spotted cycling around his bike in a predatory manner that day. He followed two other women, Beata Baraska and Anne-Marie Kelly, who were brilliant and compelling witnesses in this case, albeit Beata Baraska didn't realize that she was being followed. Anne-Marie Kelly did. Yosef Pushka was following her that day. He was cycling slowly behind her. He stared at her in an intimidating way. He was not known to Aisling Murphy, but he was out to kill that day. That's very obvious from the evidence. And thankfully, he has been found guilty of that crime. And mercifully, the family can take some comfort from that. And we can now start focusing on Aisling Murphy, because she should always have been front and centre in all of this horror.
Frank Rainey, thank you for your coverage throughout what was a very difficult trial. Frank Rainey is our courts correspondent here at Midlands 103. The late Aisling Murphy has been described as a shining light on the community after her killer was convicted of her murder. Her boyfriend, Ryan Casey, spoke after the verdict and paid this incredibly composed tribute to Aisling.
I would like to take this opportunity to express our deep gratitude to all of our family, friends and community for their unwavering support since our Aisling was stolen from us 22 months ago on the 12th of January 2022. From day one, the outpouring of love and support was felt in abundance from the Irish people, both on a national and international level, as they stood in solidarity with our family to both mourn the loss of our beautiful, talented Aisling and to condemn gender-based brutality with visceral repulsion. Aisling was a vibrant, intelligent and highly motivated young woman who embodied so many great traits and qualities of the Irish people and its communities. Her life had a huge impact on so many of those around her, and she was the epitome of a perfect role model for every little girl to look up to and strive to be. She was not only an integral part of our family, but she was also a huge shining light in our community, a community in which year in, year out, she gave back to as best she could. Words cannot express the gratitude to all members of An Garda Síochána, who conducted and pieced together a robust and thorough investigation. We wish to formally thank the prosecution legal team, Justice Hunt, and also our family liaison officers, Sergeant Lucy McLaughlin and Detective Garda Alan Burke. We'd like to also thank the victim support at court team, who were always there for us, always waiting to help us at any given moment.
And that's Ryan Casey. And likewise, with incredible poise, Aisling's brother Cahill made this statement.
I would like to take this opportunity to express our deep gratitude to all of our family, friends and community.
We would like to also thank the members of the jury for reaching this verdict. Sitting through the harrowing evidence of this trial was not an easy task, and we'll be forever grateful for their patience and resilience throughout this incredibly difficult process. Aisling was subject to incomprehensible violence by a predator, who is not known to her. While we do not glory in any conviction, we recognise the importance of holding accountable those who would commit such terrible atrocities. The judicial process cannot bring our darling Aisling back, nor can it heal our words, our wounds. But we are relieved that this verdict delivers justice. It is simply imperative that this vicious monster can never harm another woman again.
Justice Minister Helen McEntee says her thoughts are with Aisling's family and indeed her friends. The minister says Aisling's murder shocked us all, and she paid tribute to the emergency services and those in the justice system.
My thoughts are with Ray, with Kathleen, with Amy and Ryan, and indeed the wider family. The murder of Aisling shocked all of us. It moved us to action to demand an end to violence against women. And I think today's outcome, it makes us all even more determined, not just for Aisling, but for the many women who have been murdered over the years. But today is about Aisling and her family. Their lives have been changed forever, and my thoughts are very much with them.
The Garda Commissioner has paid tribute to the thorough investigation which led to Yosef Poshka being convicted of Aisling's murder. Drew Harris also extends his thoughts to the Murphy family.
Very professional job done by the investigation team, and in particular I have to commend the two detectives from Blanchardstown, visit the hospital and interviewed the, as it was, an injured party from a reported stabbing, but were obviously suspicious and reported those suspicions. So that was a very important element, and very good work by those detectives. But I would say in the main part, our thoughts are for Aisling's family, for Aisling herself. May she rest in peace.
Drew Harris, the Garda Commissioner. A large number of witnesses were called by the prosecution over the four-week murder trial. And broadcaster Roy Jennings told the court how he left his home at around 8:30 p.m. on January 12, 2022, the day Aisling Murphy was murdered. And he's been sharing with Sinead Hubble the evidence he gave to the court.
So I drove out the Dangan Road, got onto the dual carriageway, and just past AES on the left-hand side, I came around the corner, and it was obviously very dark. There's no lighting there. And just out of nowhere, this guy just appeared on the side of the road, and I says to myself, what is this idiot doing on the road? I could have easily have hit him. But it was very dark. I could tell he was dressed in dark clothing. I didn't think anything of it. Went out to Aldi, did my shopping. I was there for about 10 minutes. So I decided to head back the same direction. Now, obviously, this guy had crossed the road to the opposite side. So when I was driving back, I could see him walking toward me when I was driving in my car. And I got a pretty decent look at him. He was walking on the side. The first thing I noticed was the tracksuit bottoms that he was wearing, because they were black and they had a cream or white stripe down the side. So that's the first thing I noticed. I noticed that he was of Middle Eastern European, kind of had that look about him. He had dark beard, dark complexion, and he looked really rough, as if he was rolling around in muck and dirt. So I initially thought to myself, that's hardly the guy that was involved. And then I thought to myself, sure, the guards are after arresting somebody, so it couldn't be him. But I decided not to ring the guards because, as I said, they had a suspect at the time. But I did think to myself, this looked dodgy. There was something about this character that just didn't feel right. So anyway, a couple of days later, I was sent a image of a CCTV screen grab of the alleged suspect. When I got this photograph sent to me of the alleged new suspect, the first thing I noticed was the tracksuit bottoms that he was wearing. And I said to myself, oh my God, that's the guy I saw on the road that night. So straight away, I rang the guards and gave them my statement. I went with detectives out to the direction where I was driving that night, gave them an account of what I saw, and pretty much that was it.
What was the experience like of being in court?
Nerve-wracking. It's not something I've ever done before. It was a hard thing to do, but I felt that I had to do it for Aisling.
Obviously, Yosef Puska was in court. Did you look at him?
When I got up to the witness box, I knew he was in court, but I didn't realise whereabouts he was in the courtroom. So as I was giving my evidence, I was kind of trying to look around to see if I could spot him, and I couldn't. It was only when I was finished that I was allowed remain for the remainder of the hearing that day, and I was allowed to sit over to the side, and then I could see him in the witness box. So I kept staring at him. He looked different, way different than the night I saw him. He had long hair, he had a ponytail, well groomed, but definitely the guy I saw that night.
And what was the feeling like in court?
It was very, very surreal. It just didn't feel real or normal. You know, it's you'd see this sort of stuff on TV programs all the time. That's what it actually felt like. And even looking back and thinking back about it, it was a weird experience.
And that's Roy Jennings, who gave evidence during the trial. And as you've heard yesterday, the murder conviction was handed down to Yosef Puska. Pat Murray is a former detective. Indeed, he wrote the book The Making of a Detective, and he's based in Mullingar. Pat, good morning.
Good morning.
What's your assessment of the evidence that was heard during that trial?
Yeah, well, I think the evidence was overwhelming. I think it was very well represented to the jury by the senior counsel. I think the Gardaí done a very fine job, and I think the cooperation between the Gardaí in Blanchardstown and the Gardaí in Tullamore at that time, when Puska ended up in hospital, was very well done, and the guards conducted themselves very well and acquired evidence from what Puska had said. And also then the evidence of his DNA under Aisling's fingernails, like, you know what I mean? Like, that puts them in contact, like, you know what I mean? Now, he did say, and it was a very good move by the guards, and they often do this, they don't release details of the particular murder and how they're killed, and Puska was able to say he stabbed her in the neck, which was how she died. So, do you know what I mean? There was overwhelming evidence there. I'm surprised it even took them 2 hours, like, you know, to make up their mind. But it just shows the justice system does work, and everything went well in this particular case, you know.
The judge touched on this yesterday, but again, some people wonder how a barrister can defend when the evidence is almost incontrovertible to the contrary. They have a job to do.
They have a job to do, and it's a constitutional, it's in the constitution, every citizen of this state has a right to a fair trial. And if he says I'm not guilty, well, that has to be represented in what he thinks he's not guilty and why he's not guilty. And it has to be, you know, the barrister has to do his job to represent his client. And that is the job he has to do, you know, because you'll find next week that barrister will be on the prosecuting side on some other case. So, look, it's just the way it goes. And it's, you know, it's to do a good job. And Mr. Puska got his chance in court to show that to be represented that he was not guilty, that he didn't do this. But the evidence was overwhelming, and it was well investigated. And that's the outcome that was you know, in the guilty verdict yesterday, like, you know. So that's it, like. But the only thing I would say, and the bugbear I always have, is that, like, why he will be handed a life sentence, but it's not really life, you know.
Yeah.
He can now apply for parole.
What does it mean in practice?
Years.
So he can apply for parole after how long?
Yeah, 12 years now. It used to be 7, but now they've moved it to 12 years. But I can tell you, in 12 years' time, the pain and suffering that the Murphy family are going through, you know, will be just as raw in 12 years' time when he applies for parole. And, you know, this is where, and I know Minister McEntee was bringing it in at one stage, where judges can say, or have the option to say, well, look, at life imprisonment, but you're not entitled to parole for 30 years or whatever. I know in one particular case, and I'm still in contact with the family, they, before the killer of their daughter gets out, they would like to be, you know, her past gone. They don't, you know, and they fear the day that he gets out, like, you know. And not that they're afraid of him, it just brings all the pain back, and they feel that they've been, they have the life sentence because their daughter was taken from them, and, you know, if the killer can get out. So that's always a bugbear. Mm. But I think that,
well, unfortunately for the Murphy family, as of now, or as of next week at least, at the sentencing hearing, the judge does not have that discretion.
No, he doesn't have that discretion, but he should. It should be there that he should be able to, because of the heinous nature of the crime, and the fact that if this man was let out when he's anyway younger, could he kill another woman? Of course he could. And would he have, if he wasn't caught, would he have went on and killed another woman? He probably would have had. But a judge could say, you know, at a sentence, I'm sending you to life imprisonment with no chance of parole, for application for parole, until you have served 30 years, you know. So at least the Murphy family would know, well, I know he's locked up for 30 years, and we are probably going to have passed or gone, like, in that period of time. We don't have to worry or think, or, you know, I mean, it gives them more time to recover, or, you know, to come to terms with what happened, because it doesn't, it's amazing. I've dealt with so many families who have lost their loved ones through murder, and they tell me it doesn't get any easier as time goes by. People say, oh, time is a great healer. It doesn't heal that pain, like, you know. And any time they hear the person's name, or if the parole board get in contact with them, or this was applying for parole, you know, is there anything you want to say? It brings it all back, you know. It brings it all back. And I think families should be spared that type of, you know, pain and suffering, you know. And it's just my view on it, like, you know.
Pat, always grateful for your views. Thank you very much for taking the call.
All right, thank you.
That's Pat Murray from Murray Investigations in Mullingar. He wrote the book The Making of a Detective, which details some of the cases he was involved in the Gorthy, including murder, fraud, kidnap. The Joe Riley case perhaps being one of the more high profile. These people in Tullamore have been giving their reaction to Midlands 103's Michael Cannon.
I think they feel relieved. I say they feel relieved, and that they're glad that justice was done. All the evidence was thoroughly researched. Any possibilities that might be innocent dismissed.
My town's in shock for a long time. That could happen to anybody. Just out walking, like, or running, or whatever, like, you know. Town didn't seem to be a safe place anymore.
Oh, yeah, there was a horrible sense of eeriness. There really, really was. Mm. And there, not so long ago in the summer, I actually walked from the Ballycommon Bakehouse, myself and my friend, and we walked into Tullamore. And when you got to those memorials, there was Fiona Pender, there was another lady, and then you got to Ashley Murphy. And I thought, God, I don't know if I'd do that walk again.
Well, I'm delighted that there's some kind of closure for the family, but I mean, they have a long way to go yet before it's only the start of a healing process for them. Well, there was a lot of, I suppose, fear when it did happen, because no one knew. Like, I mean, you always hear people saying, this thing doesn't happen around here, but I mean, it's unfortunate that it does happen. And there was, I suppose, a bit of fear around, and women were afraid to go on their own. I know I wasn't happy with my wife going out, or anyway, my daughter going out on their own.
Well, hopefully for the family it'll be closure, but I know they'll never forget Ashley, like, you know. But do you think justice was done? And I hope it doesn't get out.
I'm delighted. He deserves it. The longer they keep him in, the better.
And relief was a word you heard a couple of times during those comments, and I think a lot of people around the wider Midlands were holding their breath yesterday, waiting to hear what the verdict would be. One of them, Anne Clark, the manager of Offaly Domestic Violence Support Service. Anne, good morning.
Good morning, Will.
Sum up your thoughts on learning that Josef Puszka had finally been convicted.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for the last few days we were had an underlying anxiety, you know, that a guilty verdict would ensue, and it was just pure relief yesterday. We were all very emotional in the office, and particularly, you know, holding Aisling's family and parents, brother and sister, boyfriend and friends in our hearts, and the devastating few weeks they've had to endure and the evidence they had to listen to. And, you know, justice prevailed yesterday. So, yeah, it was just pure relief, Will.
There was a lady giving her comments a moment ago, and she walks the banks of the canal, and you see the memorial for Aisling, you see the memorial for Fiona Pender. That naturally creates a sense of unease. How are women feeling now after this man has been locked up?
I think, yeah, over the last couple of years, there's certainly been a sense of more heightened awareness for women in particular when out walking or exercising or just going about their daily business, because we saw in the case that, you know, two women were followed during the day at different times. So, yeah, there was definitely an unease. Would I say that that's going to ease slightly? I don't know. I think that women are still very afraid. I know Offaly County Council did a survey last year and looked at safety in the community and looked at how we can enhance that safety and make women feel a bit more secure. And they looked at improving lighting, you know, making people aware of domestic violence and, you know, where the pathways could be to seek help. You know, in particular, that particular survey identified almost two out of three were experienced violence from an ex-partner or a partner that they were currently with while walking the streets. And, you know, we also welcome, I suppose, the unfortunate, tragic death of Aisling really catapulted the response by the Department of Justice. And, you know, non-fatal strangulation comes into force this week. Stalking comes into force this week. We're now seeing double sentencing going from 5 years to 10 years for domestic abuse and coercive control. So it really did strengthen and really make the government sit up to take a response to violence against women. And I don't know if I can truly say that women will be at ease, but I certainly know they'll have relief that he's now locked up.
Well, I think what has unsettled so many men and women in summing up the response to this is we still don't know why. We know how, we know when, we know where, we know who. We don't know why, and we may never.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think the biggest thing about any violence against women is certainly all to do with power and control and to dominate, and that urge for perpetrate, that sense of complete dominance and power over women, that still continues today. We see that quite a lot in our own service, with particularly post-separation abuse and in regards to really extreme cases of coercive control. And it's all down to power. And, you know, we really need a whole cultural shift, Will, in how we're educating our young people, how to be respectful for our healthy relationships. How do you respect each other? And, you know, that needs to start right from primary school. And we need that whole cultural shift so that we're not worried about going out on walking a simple walk in the middle of the afternoon or going about our daily business.
odvss.ie and 0579351886. Anne Clark of Offaly Domestic Violence Support Service. Thank you.
Thank you, Will.
Some comments just to conclude. Will, well done to the legal team who represented the Murphys. And from Teresa, she's not convinced the barristers and solicitors should have represented the defence of Josef Puszka. They had an obligation to. That's what they are duty bound to achieve, unfortunately. Will, I just want to say I am so happy that justice was done for Aisling, and my thoughts and my prayers are with her family. That is from Lorraine in Birr, who, like many, ask, well, what can we learn as to the adequacy of Garda vetting on people coming into this country? Well, what we know is that Mr. Puszka did not have a criminal record and was not ever to the attention of the Gardaí. That's why they didn't have the DNA in their database. Well, I heard the headlines this morning, and I think what was summed up by the judge as evil being in the room is a very good headline, says James Lawless in Portlaoise. Another caller says a great result for the Murphy family. This is from Brian in Athlone, who adds, the murderer will probably appeal and have free legal aid at the taxpayers' expense. He strikes me as the type of person who takes all he can. Otherwise, why put the family through the ordeal of a trial? Greg says justice was served for Aisling yesterday, but it will not bring her back. The court should ensure that life means life. She will be greatly missed. But as you heard from Detective Murray earlier, after 12 years, there is a parole review entitlement. And the judge, whatever his personal views, he does not have the discretion to extend that beyond 12 years. I want to conclude by remembering the light that evil cannot dim, to borrow the tribute paid to Aisling Murphy by her family outside the steps of the court yesterday after Josef Puszka was convicted of her murder. And I will leave you today with the words of Frank Kelly, the former principal of Durrow National School, where Aisling was a teacher, as he paid tribute in poem.
Before you, Aisling, the expectant faces, drinking in your every word. The little girls who wanted to be like you, wanted to be you. The little boys who listened, because Miss Murphy knows everything. Your classroom, a happy place where parents knew you cared. You'd teach them to play, you'd teach them to sing, because Miss Murphy knows everything. Now we pause and remember, on your spirit reflect, in the silence of your absence deep. We'll check the homework you can't now correct, and safe will your memory keep. But Durrow is robbed, its golden heart taken from in front of our eyes. Burgled is your beautiful music, stolen your beautiful smile. No more can we hear your song, enjoy your charm or grace, for gone is the expectation you brought to this grateful place. Though a short time here, in our hearts you're enshrined. We don't count you in years, but in smiles left behind. Forever will echo the tunes you played, the songs you've sung. For with us, dear Aisling, you are forever young.